This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
First, though, as you probably know, the government is in the process of tightening up the rules for refugees, particularly in relation to family reunification. So what are the real-world effects of that? And given the relatively small numbers involved, is it even necessary? Fiona Hurley is Chief Executive of the Migrant and Refugee Rights Centre. Good afternoon, Fiona.
Good afternoon, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Just for clarity's sake, because sometimes people mix up refugees and migrants and all those kinds of things, could you just run us through what it is that the government is planning to do?
So the government is proposing that people who are recognised as refugees, so that means people who have come in through the asylum process, have gone through a reasonably complicated assessment of their case and have been granted refugee status by the state, that they would be barred from applying for family reunification with a spouse or minor children for 3 years after they get status. And then financial restrictions would also be imposed on those families.
Yeah, those restrictions meaning they have to be financially self-sustaining before they can apply.
Yes, and John, we haven't seen the detail of what the minister is proposing yet, and that's another thing that is worrying, in that, you know, the minister's made this announcement, but we haven't actually seen the text of the draft legislation yet.
Yeah, now when people use the phrase family reunification, what does that mean in effect? Because, again, people might think, oh, you can just invite the grandparents and great-grandparents and suddenly you have 25 people turning up.
Yeah, so family reunification is recognised as being really important in both national and international law. And for a refugee in Ireland, someone who has, again, gone through the process and has been recognised as someone who's got a fear of persecution and who cannot return to their home country, they can apply for a spouse that they were married to before they came to Ireland and applied for asylum, and for children who are under 18 at the time that they want to make their application.
And does it matter where those children are, where that spouse or children are now, if, say, for instance, they're in another European country?
No, they could still apply. The location of the family isn't a contingency in this. What we see majority of the time through our service is that the spouse and children are generally in the country that the refugee has fled from. It's often really difficult and dangerous to make the journey to Ireland to apply for asylum. And families have to make really difficult decisions about family separation, who it's safe is to travel for. Often it's the dad and the husband in the family who has the best chance of survival through that dangerous journey.
Yeah. Now, if the authorities have come to the conclusion that it's dangerous for, let's say, a man to return to that country, could they not reasonably infer that it's probably equally dangerous for his wife and children as well to remain in that country?
Yeah, and that is the reason why we have family reunification exists. It's one of the few safe and legal pathways for people. And we, you know, hear a lot of the time that we want people to, come to Ireland with a visa in hand, and we want, you know, to know what their identity is and to understand who they are before they arrive. And family reunification is one really important way of doing that. And, you know, the danger point, I think, is really important as well. I mean, we've come across kind of a handful of really tragic cases in our office where, you know, family members have died during the family reunification process.
Yeah, you did have a case of a Syrian man who turned up in your office with the papers in his hand to make that application.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that story of a Syrian man is one that kind of stayed with me, but is really, I think, symbolic of a lot of the cases that we see. So in this particular case, this gentleman had wanted to apply for family reunification and was eligible to do so. He made the application. We were coming in to submit further documentation. But he came in and he was a shadow of himself. And it turned out that he had been trying to, you know, he had been in a conversation with his wife on the phone the night before when the phone went dead. And he learned that there was an explosion in the area and he couldn't get through. He didn't get through to anyone in the area. And he had to go through the next, you know, 24, 48 hours, not knowing if his wife and child were still alive. And that's the reality for a lot of people in those refugee situations.
Yeah. And were his wife and child alive?
In that case, yes. And they are very happily settled in Ireland now. And they are both really successful. And they're just a beautiful family. But we do come across situations where, you know, people disappear. We don't know what happened to them.
Mm.
Or a child gets sick. It's, you know, one of the hardest things I've had to do is break the news to a father that the medical documentation that he was showing me about his child was showing that his child had leukemia. And the treatment available in the country that they were in for leukemia was just almost non-existent. So he was facing the possibility he would never, ever see his little girl, a child that he hadn't even been able to meet in person because his wife was pregnant when he had left.
Yeah. You'd imagine as well that, that there's an argument to be made if someone has arrives here and is granted refugee status, it'll be easier for them to integrate into communities if they have their family around them.
Yes. People say to us that, like, how can you concentrate on your English classes or on finding work when, you know, every day a part of your heart and your mind is in another country just constantly worrying about your family. And we know that, you know, even things like integrating with families in schools, you know, talking to the other parents, all of these are really important ways to become involved in your community. And it is very hard to become involved in your community if you feel like your community is also keeping you apart and the state is keeping you apart from your family.
Yeah. Now, the minister and the Taoiseach haven't really gone into any great detail as to why they're bringing in these rules, other than it has to be tough but fair. Is there evidence of this system being abused?
No evidence that we can find. So the actual process for family reunification is a very regulated one. So someone puts in the application, they put in all the supporting documents to prove who their family are, their family relationship is, if there's any doubt about the relationship between, let's say, a parent and a child. DNA testing is very often required. We know that the average number of people coming in per kind of successful application is 2.5 family members. So there's really no evidence as to this being a system that's abused or this being a system that is creating a huge number of people coming to Ireland. It just seems like a target that no one's asking for. Like, no one's saying that these refugees, people that, you know, we specifically talk about how we want to protect the asylum process because we need to make sure that we can continue to welcome those who need our protection. But yet this proposal would target that cohort.
And what kind of numbers are we talking about in terms of family reunification? How many people have benefited from that in the last few years?
Yeah, so since 2022, people who are family members of refugees and people with subsidiary protection. So just for your listeners, when you go through the asylum process, there's a few different statuses you can get, and two of them are eligible for family reunification. There's refugees, and there's a slightly different status of subsidiary protection. So between those two categories of people, just over 2,500 family members since 2022.
Okay, it's not a massive number.
It's in the hundreds per year.
Another point the government seems to be saying is that by introducing these stricter rules, it kind of harmonises our regulations in line with those of other EU countries. Are all EU countries the same in this regard?
No, they're not. And the reality is that these rules would actually make us among some of the most draconian rules in the EU. It's generally recognised that refugees, people who cannot return, we've recognised it's not safe for them to return to their home country, so they cannot have a family life in that home country, need to be treated differently, and that we need to make family life possible for them. So that three-year requirement and the financial restrictions, no, they're not standardised at all. And, you know, in some countries, there are some restrictions for people with subsidiary protection, that second category I was talking about. But these would be, again, some of the most draconian across the EU member states.
Yeah. And the idea of, because, you know, it's reuniting families, is there a possibility it might be even be unconstitutional?
Yes. So we are quite concerned about that as well. We've got very strong family rights in the states. We know when the legislation was last changed, back in 2016, or the end of 2015, in fact, of the International Protection Act of 2015, the rules were changed to make them more strict to what they are today. There were concerns about the constitutionality of that. This goes very, very much further, and to prevent a refugee who cannot establish their family life anywhere else from having a family life for, you know, a minimum of 3 years after status, but realistically an application process will probably take at least another year after that, if not longer. We have serious concerns about its constitutionality.
So could a constitutional challenge be on the cards?
I think that if this legislation is put in place, I do think that there is every chance that you will start to see High Court cases coming through. And that will take a huge toll on refugee families, who are kind of waiting in limbo in uncertainty for even longer after that.
When is this likely to happen?
So it is likely to form part of the International Protection Bill that is going through the Oireachtas at the moment. We know that the government are really trying to push this through. It's going to be part of a kind of bigger reform of the entire asylum process in Ireland, and that it would be operational by June 12th.
And they've also said they want to speed up the process in general, which I suppose most people would be in favour of. Is from your point of view, for that to happen, what needs to be in place?
Yeah, and I think when, you know, we're talking about speed, we need to be careful that it's not speed at the expense of, you know, a fair due process. So one of the criteria, I would say one of the things that will happen with the new bill that's in place is that the majority of applicants coming into the country now will be sped through the process from initial application to final decision and potential removal decision within 3 months. And realistically, we don't think that there is likely a chance that people have an adequate opportunity to get proper advice, maybe to get the medical treatments that they might need to actually evidence the fact that they're a survivor of torture or domestic, sexual or gender-based violence within that period of time. It can take a long time, or can certainly longer than a few weeks, to feel safe enough to be able to disclose this, to get an adequate evidence of it as well. So the faster than the current process, yes, for sure. But the 3 months, we are just really concerned that there's just not adequate protections in place. And certainly the ability to get adequate legal advice within that period of time, there's just no evidence that there's sufficient resourcing in place for the legal aid board to make it possible for people to get legal advice in that period of time. For someone who is basically going into a determination process that will change their lives, if not, you know, decide whether their lives are safe or in danger, I think at the very least people should be able to get early legal advice for that.
Fiona, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was Fiona Hurley there, Chief Executive of the Migrant and Refugee Rights Centre.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.